Yesterday, I gave an introduction that we will talk about the different means to holiness. The first one is, you know, to be holy, you have to desire for it. You have to really want to become holy. And Tanqueray, when he was talking about to become holy, that desire, he mentioned about for that desire to be fruitful, it should be supernatural. It should be predominant, persevering, and also practical. So our desire to become holy should be supernatural. Supernatural in motive, but also in principle. That the reason we want to become holy is because of faith. Because we know that we are called to be holy. Because we know that we are created by God, and God created us for Him. And so we find the purpose of our life by being firmly attached to God, by loving God. Because to become holy, the important action to become holy is to love God. So because of faith, we know that we are created for God, and we have to strive to be like God through His grace, through charity. But also in principle, that how we become holy is not our, it's not just our own doing. It's mainly God's doing. And so we need the grace of God. We cannot just rely on our own strength. We have to do our best. We have to cooperate. But ultimately, what makes us holy is the grace of God. We can think about, you know, it's like a coin, two sides. We ask the question, how we are saved? We saved by the grace of God. And then the other side, you can ask yourself that question, how we become holy? It's also by the grace of God. But, you know, just like in our own salvation, we have to do something. God gives us the commandments. We have to keep the commandments. We have to receive the sacraments. And so we cannot just sit there and say the grace of God will do everything. I don't need to do anything. I can just sleep in every single day and not doing anything. No, you know, you have to do your part to cooperate with the grace of God. But also to become holy is the work of the grace of God, but we have to do our part as well. And so we have different means of holiness, but they are all there to open our heart to the grace of God. And then we have that desire to be holy should be predominant. It's something that we desire more than anything else. And thinking about that, to make to heaven, we need to be saved. We need to be holy. If we are not saved already here on earth, and the moment we die, then we are going to be in purgatory until we are holy, until we become saved. So that's our goal, to become holy. Is something that we all have to work on. It's something that we all call to. Second Vatican Council, you know, talking about the universal call to holiness and also the universal call to mission. It's sometimes people think, you know, to be holy, it's just the calling of the priests and the religious. But, you know, the church emphasized to us that to be holy is the call for everyone. And Pope John Paul II made that his important theme of his pontificate, and he canonized and beatified many holy people. A lot of them are lay people from different walks of life, different culture and background, to give us the powerful message of the universal call to holiness. So that desire to be holy should be in the heart of each one of us. But that desire should also be persevering, that we have to really not too much to consider what we have already done, but we have to think about what we need to be done. We should not, you know, just, you know, sometimes it's also when you are in a spiritual life, it's so easy that you think, oh, I'm so pious. You look down on other people that are not as pious as you and think, I'm doing really well. You know,
that's not the good attitude. You know, we should be actually thinking about God giving maybe more graces and have the obligation to become much more holy. Some of you have read the book, the unpublished manuscript of Purgatory. Yeah? You know, that book mentioned about that God called some people to higher degree of holiness. And if the person has that call to be higher degree of holiness, but neglect that, the person have a greater chance not to be saved. You know, because it's not cooperating with the grace of God. So God by asking more from you. And in that situation, to respond is only the right thing to do. And not to respond is risking one's salvation. So for other people, God called them to be holy, but maybe not at a high degree of holiness. But we all have to aim to become holy, you know, because of course we don't know what is God's plan for us. If there's grace given to us, we should always respond. And I think the fact that you can be here, that means you are already have quite a good grace to be here. Because you know, you a lot of you are already doing your daily prayer, you know, daily mass, a lot of you to come to daily mass, pray the rosary, or pay the divine office. You know, I have an intense schedule and I hesitate to invite too many people that might not get used to a more intense schedule of praying, you know. So this retreat wasn't a properly announced retreat, it's a retreat that is people to come. So I myself as a priest can somehow see, you know, you do have that potential to be holy. And I think it's important that you continue to cooperate with that grace that God has given you and continue to have that desire to grow in holiness. But it's not something that we just say, oh, I'm doing this and that, I'm pretty good. It's always something more that we can do. And if you really look at the details life of the saints, you know, really look at one of the details life of the saints, we all have to confess we are still far from being perfect. Because, you know, when we look at the detailed life of the saints, we see the interior struggle, we see the sacrifices that they make in big things, in small things, the kind of discipline that they have, you know, we find that we are still far from it. And we find that we still have a long way to go, and we always have progress to make. So it's something that that desire should not be just stop thinking, you know, if I do certain things, you know, and I find myself doing a certain rosary every day, I do some prayer every day, you think that you are already doing enough. It's never enough. I'm talking about not the quantity, of course. Sometimes you the regular prayer, of course, you keep doing that, but the quality can always improve. You know, let's say you do some rosary every day already. You can always do that. You know, when you pray the rosary, when you already pray the divine office every day, morning prayer, evening prayer, night prayer, you can always do it better. And the saints, you know, as they grow in holiness, they not necessarily increase the quantity of their prayer. They are already praying much, but they increase greatly the quality of their prayer. And that's something that we can always work on. That's something that we can always work on. You know, we may already go into confession regularly, go into communion regularly, but those sacraments, they can always do better. We can always attend the Mass with greater devotion. We can live out the spirit of the Mass much better. And that's what the saints do. They may not increase the quantity of the number of confession or communion. They are already doing that quite frequently anyway, but they increase their quality over the years. So persevering in growing in holiness. And finally, practical. The desire should be practical. If somebody telling you, you know, oh, I really like to be like Dr. Ross, you know, I want to be a doctor. What he was doing was that he always played computer game, and then in college he enrolled in computer science, and then he was doing everything except medical. I want to be like Dr. Ross, but that's a lie. You are saying with your lips that you want to be like him, but in your action, you're doing everything contrary in the other direction. So people can say that I want to become holy, But then in your daily life, you are nasty to people, you are not doing anything you want to do. Go to confession, you know, you skip the meeting, you put your mask on the weekday, you know, and you skip your rosary a lot of times, you just do the contrary. So if you really love the goal, you also love the means. If you want to be like Dr. Ross, you have to be totally medical. You have to really go to the hospital and see the blood, you know. and doing nothing or doing the contrary. So
if you love the goal, you have to love the means. So we want to become holy, we have to love the means as well. So prayer, sacrifice, spiritual reading, all the means we're going to talk about, conform to the will of God, we have to love the means as well, not just the goal. So we have that desire, the desire should be practical. So far, so good. So, something that really helps us to foster that desire to become holy, because it's a desire that we might have. You know, sometimes young people, when they see the life of the saints, you know, that really kindle in the heart that desire to become holy. But over the year, you know, they might become busy in life, you know, doing this, doing that, and that desire becomes weaker and weaker. So we do need something constantly to help us to maintain that desire and to help that desire to grow. So there are a few things that we have to do to help our desire to grow. I think the most simple thing is prayer and meditation. Prayer and meditation do help our desire to grow, to become holy. Holy readings is always important. We will talk about readings later on. But, you know, when you read the Gospel, if you read the New Testament, the writing of St. Paul, if you really take them seriously, you can find of them a lot of the invitation to become holy in those writings. If you read the life of the saints, the writing of the saints, that's constant reminder to become holy. But also when you do the prayer, the liturgical prayer, morning prayer, evening prayer, night prayer, and the Mass. When you do those prayer, remember when you do the liturgical prayer, you are not only talking to God, it's also God talking to you. It's always good that in those prayer, you try to pay attention of the meaning of the word being said. And you will find that there has been constant reminder for us to become holy. If you follow some of the prayer, opening prayer, post-communion prayer, all those different prayer, if you really take them seriously, they are prayer that always invite us to pray to become more holy. So if we pay attention to those things that we can be doing on a regular basis, prayer, meditation, spiritual reading, liturgy, they are all means to help us to kindle that desire to be holy, and also to maintain and to help that desire to grow so that we can be doing the proper thing to grow in holiness. Now, besides that first mean, interior mean to desire to become holy, another means that pointed out by Father Tanqueray is knowledge of God and of self. And Tanqueray pointed out that to achieve knowledge of God, there are three things that we have to do. The devotes the study of theology. And the second one is meditation. And the third one is the habit of seeing God in all things. So those three are the means proposed by Tanqueray that we can grow in our knowledge of God. Now, devout study of theology. Of course, theology, if you study like an academic thing, it can be quite cold. And so, not all of us are called to be academic. Not all are called to be learned.
But I do think that all Catholics, especially in our time and age, we are all taught to be knowledgeable. That we need to have the knowledge so that we know why we believe. And also, God willing, when we have the opportunity, we can actually explain the faith to others and to share with conviction. And the same who are theologians, like St. Bonaventure, St. Thomas Aquinas, when they study theology, they study on their knees. Like St. Thomas Aquinas, he would pray before the Blessed Sacrament. And St. Thomas, I think this is his quotation, said that he had learned more from his crucifix than from the works of doctors of the church. I think there was a story about, I think that St. Thomas visiting St. Bonaventure, asking him where he got all his knowledge from. And St. Bonaventure showed to St. Thomas a crucifix, you know, that also he keeps the crucifix a lot, so you know, the bottom part is also a bit worn out, you know, because he was kissing that a lot, the crucifix. And he pointed out to St. Thomas that it is his book, it's where he learned a lot of his knowledge.
So Tancred points out that the devout theologian will know how to rise from contemplation of the most speculative truths to acts of adoration, of wonder, of gratitude, and of love, which spring simultaneously from the study of Christian dogmas. So if people study theology, the desire to love God and know God better. That's the right motive, that the really devout study of theology. Some people can study theology with, you know, just see it as a kind of academic. And that itself, you know, if without faith and devotion, can actually become arrogant and pride. And of course, with a person study with devotion and love, and that knowledge will be helpful to increase the deepened knowledge of God. Sometimes it may be good that nowadays you don't really have, you know, a book that you can read, but also sometimes theology can be learned also by DVDs and watching things like that. Some of us in the young adult group, you know, even though we are not young adult, we are in the young adult group. We just finished a philosophy course on friendship. You know, that is actually a study of philosophy. And then later on in September, we will start a theology course on the Book of Daniel and then another theology. So that's a good thing. The group that's watching DVD, we can actually learn something quite a bit academic, but also help us to know about you know, philosophy a bit, and also theology. And then we have quite a bit of resources around.
And there are also some, most of us here, I think actually all of us here, except Keith and Ross, are born Catholics, that we were baptized as Catholic. Am I correct? Are you a convert? Everybody else is a convert? Huh?
I baptized in 1986.
Oh, so you were a convert. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But except that you're... Huh?
I'm not born Catholic.
You're not born, you're a convert. So a couple, four converts. Most of us are born Catholic, and then the four will be baptized later on in life. Yeah. But you know, some of them, like Kimberly and Ross from Protestant, become Catholic. And in recent years, there have been some Protestants become Catholic, and they become people who are good in apologetics or defending the Catholic faith, like Scott Hahn and many others. And of course, their writings are also really good, you know, for the devout study of theology, because the evangelical, you know, they really on fire and preaching about the faith. So when they become Catholic, they become our enemies to be our allies. and this is ridiculous, you know. So if you have more Protestants become Catholic like that, wow, it would be so powerful. It would be, you know, and so there are some really famous writers in the Catholic world also who defend the faith, were former Protestant and they converted and they became Catholic. And their writings, you know, they really explain things well. Why we Catholic believe in this or that. And I think that's also a good resource too of the study of theology. So, and then meditation. Now, meditation, a lot of spiritual writers do point out that to become holy, mental prayer is important. Of course, when we do our rosary well, or Divine Mercy really well, that also becomes a mental prayer, because we meditate when we pray the rosary. When we do the Divine Mercy, we meditate on the Passion of Christ, which is the best subject for meditation. But also we have some other things about the faith that may not be covered directly by the rosary and the Divine Mercy. But that's why some quiet time every day to meditate is a good practice. I would say 10 or 15 minutes of quiet time to meditate is good every day. If you cannot afford 15 minutes, then spend 10 minutes. But I think if you make the time, 15 minutes can be done, you know. And 15 minutes, the thing about Our Lady in Fatima, she asked for 15 minutes of meditation of the 15 mystery of the rosary on the first Saturday of the month. That 15 minutes. You think about St. Teresa of Avila, she mentioned that, she said, if somebody meditate, do mental prayer for 15 minutes per day, she basically almost like guaranteed that person will be saved. Because, if I'm not mistaken, her theory is that if you are faithful to your mental prayer, you eventually have to give up your sin. You cannot have sin and prayer together. Either you give up one or the other. When you keep on praying, eventually you will give up the sin.
Can you define mental prayer?
Like, so mental prayer basically is a prayer of the mind that you I think we make the distinction between mental prayer and vocal prayer. But I think a lot of time mental prayer is meditation. It's meditation. Sometimes people may, but of course the mental prayer is not quite consist in thinking much. It's more important to aim to loving much. So sometimes people might have a hard time to stay focused, even for 10, 15 minutes. That's why for a lot of people, the first step to learn mental prayer is to pray the rosary or Divine Mercy, because those prayers, they can keep the mind focused for 20 minutes, 25 minutes, or Divine Mercy for 7, 10 minutes. So that's a good start, because you've got some vocal prayer to help your mind to stay focused. If it is not using vocal prayer to help you, then a good way to help you to stay focused would be a spiritual book, or a meditation book. So there are some books that meant to help people to do mental prayer. One of the ones that is quite popular in the good old days is Divine Intimacy. So that's a book by a Carmelite priest. And then In Conversation with God is also a one that is prepared by an Opus Dei priest that's in 7 volumes. Some people, they may just use the gospel reading of the day or the first reading. That can also be done. So you got something that as kind of reading that can help you to stay focused. Well, sometimes for some people, the meditation can be so simple as that the person, you know, read a little bit from the meditation book or from a text and then think about that. And then the thinking will turn to praying to God. So that would be a good way to keep your mind focused, and then if your mind starts to wander, then you start to read again. Doesn't need to be much, just a one line or two, and then you think about that, and then you turn to prayer. For some people, they can be, after they've been doing this for a while, they may find that they are so easy that they just think about being in the presence of God and they focus on the praying part without much help of the book. But of course, you know, when different people have different mental capacity, sometimes not because you are not praying, but because you are tired, you know, so that's why you may need the help of the book. Even the same person, you know, on a particular day when you have a good sleep, you know, you can do mental prayer really easily. You got a bad night, you know, then you might be needing more help from folk than some other thing. Even a same person might be different from day to day. Sometimes, some people, when they persist in doing mental prayer, sometimes not even mental prayer, but even praying the rosary or divine mercy, they might feel the presence of God more strongly. That quite often is a novel spiritual experience people can experience. So in that situation, the person may not be making much effort, but already feel that a strong sense of peace and the presence of God, and they're just there to be with God, and they don't have to use any word or reading anything, you know. So we call that contemplation. We call that contemplation because you don't need to have any. But. You cannot force that to happen, you know. You know, sometimes you might experience that, the other day you might not experience that. It's God doing, not you doing. So oftentimes, you know, you do need something to give yourself a structure so your mind will be idle. Because you cannot say every time you will feel the same way. So that's why it's always good to have some kind of structure you can get into, but be also flexible. Because, you know, keep in mind the principle is the meditation or mental prayer consists, the main thing is not to think much but to love much. Not to increase your knowledge mainly, but to increase your love for God. So when you do through the presence of God and experience that, then you can just let go of the reading and just be with God and pray to God and love Him and worship Him and pray to Him. So the praying and loving God is more important than the thinking. The thinking is more of a preparation for loving. So that's a nutshell of the description of mental prayer. So, the result of mental prayer is that the spirit of prayer continues in our daily activities, that we can see God in all things. We can see God in things, in people, in the different events of our daily lives. We know that, you know, creatures, especially nature, do reflect the power, the wisdom, and the goodness of God. And we also, a lot of time, people, by contemplating the beauty of creation, can raise their mind into prayer. And so that's why you see a lot of time when you go to a monastery, usually it's quite close to nature. You think about monastery, you have to be in the same place for the rest of your life. You rarely go out. So if you don't have a beautiful nature, you know, for some people, you know, not to go out for your whole life, you'd be like in jail, you know. So a lot of time in monastery, you know, is a place that is beautiful in nature. Yeah, beautiful mountain or beautiful garden, so that the monks there can actually contemplate God through creation. So when we go to monastery, we feel that way. But when we go into our own world, we can also think about, you know, we need more effort, but we can also do our best to see God in different places, in different people, you know, because of how each individual person reflects the image of God in a really unique way. No person is alike, so every person do reflect God in a really unique way. But we have to know God, we also have to know ourselves. There is a quotation, "May I know you, O Lord, that I may love you. May I know myself, that I may despise myself." When we know God, we know that He is the all-powerful one that we have
to rely on Him. When we know ourselves, we know how weak we are, that we have to rely on God, right, and on our own strength. A good way to achieve knowledge of self is the examination of conscience. Examination of conscience. It's good if you have the, if you are able to do some kind of meditation in the morning. And then in the evening, do at least a brief examination of conscience. You can simply be, you know, getting through the thinking about the day, what I have done good, and thank God for the grace to allow you to do good. Be grateful for those graces. And then think about what I have done wrong. You need to think about, you know, what I have done wrong in thought, in word, in my action, and also in omission. And ask God for forgiveness. I think both meditation and examination of conscience also become more fruitful when in our praying to God and also in our asking for forgiveness, that we form resolution, that we want to resolve to make some improvement, want to promise God to do something better. And so that resolution will help us to have to allow those spiritual exercise to become more fruitful. And of course, we ask God for forgiveness. And the examination of conscience is also a kind of preparation for confession. Because when you examine your conscience, you ask God for forgiveness, you are basically confessing to God. Of course, you know, for venial sin, we can always directly confess to God and we can be forgiven already. For mortal sin, we must confess to the priest, who acting in the person of Christ. But, you know, don't forget, confession can also be done out of devotion. Because confession, when we go to confession, when absolution is given, there are twofold effects. Because absolution is the infusion of grace. So infusion of grace can take away your sin, but also the infusion of grace can give you new grace that you can practice the contrary virtues to be more strong in your spiritual life. So when you have no mortal sin in your soul and you go to confession, that's confession of devotion. A lot of pious people like you go to confession out of devotion. And it's something that Our Lady herself asked. She asked that we go to confession on the first Saturday of the month. If you are that pious, you could pay the rosary and go to communion preparation, confession would be more likely out of devotion than of necessity. So Our Lady, if you ask, you know, for confession once a month, on the first Saturday especially, making that with the intention of reparation for sin. And some really holy people go to confession really frequently. We all know, you know, John Paul II, Mother Teresa went to confession every single day. And then also there's another priest who is a blessed. He and another priest, you know, living in the same house every evening, they would hear each other confession and give absolution. So he's a blessed. I forgot the name, but he's a blessed. So confession every evening, every single day. So you, obviously they are so holy, there's no need to go to confession, you know, out of necessity, but they would go out of devotion. Because confession is not only the forgiveness of sin, of course that's the main purpose, but confession can be also done out of devotion to obtain grace. Now, of course, when it's out of necessity, we know what to confess, our mortal sin. But if it's done out of devotion, one thing we do have to watch out is that make that into too much of routine. Because it's important when we confess only venial sin that we do really sorry for that. It's so easy to be sorry for mortal sin, you know. If you are a devout, pious person, mortal sin like a big elephant in the room. It's there, you won't miss it. But if it is venial sin, oftentimes we keep confessing and we might not be truly sorry for that. So it's important for us to single out one or two venial sins that might be more outstanding in our life. And be sorry for them, at least that we have the determination to decrease the frequency. So if my predominant thought is I'm being grumpy and I complain a lot. So at least from this week to next week, you know, from this confession to next confession, let's say this time I'm grumpy 70 times. At least we start to decrease that, you know, to 35. So that you're making progress. That for venial sin. The reality is, if we are determined, by the grace of God, we can reduce mortal sin to zero. If we are determined, we can reduce deliberate venial sin to zero. No more. But we cannot, no matter how hard we try, we cannot get rid of the sins of weakness. And all the time when you are devolved, you know, that might be what you have been worked on, the sins of weakness. And it's something that oftentimes when we have the desire to grow in charity, in holiness, that desire to grow in love can really help to decrease the number of the sins of weakness.
So since we are on a retreat, let me give back something that we have done before in the 2014, beginning of the year, in the prayer meeting, you know, the spiritual survey I gave you. So you have a little exercise to help you to achieve knowledge of yourself.
Remember that our friend, you know, our spiritual survey. So if you remember doing that in 2014, so now you can do it again, so that you can ask yourself, am I still the same, or am I making progress, or have I been going backward in the spiritual life?
Seven degree in the spiritual life. The first one is hardness of heart. So, you know, for mortal sin, really because of a false conscience, you know, no remorse, and deliberate suppress all recourse to God, that really hardened of heart. And the second category is Christian only outwardly. Consider mortal sin as light evil, commit on any occasion or temptation. And prayer is quite mechanical, without attention, always dictated by temporal interest. What to win the 649, you know. And then the third one, moderate piety. Remember, you see that every category they see, look at two things to assess yourself. Your prayer life and the kind of in sin or imperfection they're falling into. So look at the prayer and the sin. Mortal piety, mortal sin, weak resistance, no flight from occasions, but genuine sorrow and good confession. Those are the customers that can come back again and again for confession. And then a venial sin, look upon as insignificant. Prayer, vocal prayer, fairly well said, but seldom. So sometimes they can pray well, but not all the time. Intermittent piety, mortal sin, loyal resistance, habitual avoidance of occasions, deep regret, tendency to atone. So they really try to avoid falling into sin. And if they do sin from time to time, it'd be out of human weakness. But they are really sorry and do their best not to fall back again. Venial sin sometimes deliberate, weak resistance, slight regret. And mental prayer is a term but often neglect.
So maybe somebody who heard about, oh, mental prayer is good, want to do it, but every time just fall asleep or ignore doing that.
And five, sustained piety. Mortals sin never or very rare in a violent certain temptation. Venial sin rarely deliberate, deeply regretted. In perfection, the soul avoids searching for them so as not to be obliged to overcome them. Prayer, constant fidelity in spite of everything to daily mental prayer. Meditation likely to pass into aspiration of love. So that's sustained piety. Number six, fervor. Venial sin, never deliberate, slip into at times through half avertance, deeply regret and fervently atone for. So it's mainly only the sins of weakness. Imperfection, guarded against and resist hardily. Prayer, mental prayer willingly prolonged, often acquire silent gazing into the face of God. So remember I mentioned about that the mental prayer at first it might be more of thinking, meditating, but later it will become a contemplation. So this is number six. And seven, relative perfection, imperfection, energetically avoided with great love. Prayer, habitual life of prayer, even while devoting oneself to exterior work. This is what I say, to see God in all things. First, for self-denial and humiliation. I think that's a tough one. Self-denial and humiliation. Hunger for Holy Eucharist and Heaven. Various infused graces of contemplative prayer. Some of the saints, you know, when they are later on in life, they really find living on earth is a burden. They really long for heaven. I think that happened to St. Teresa of the Little Flower and also St. Faustina. You know, when we think of and read their writings, they have a strong desire for heaven. And then when you read the diary of St. Faustina, it's also mentioned about the different kind of mystical experience that she had in the prayer life, in the spiritual life. So you have to think about, where am I right now? Now, of course, you know, I also mentioned before that sometimes you will find yourself in between two stages. You may find yourself 4.5 or 5.5 is possible. And then also think about what was your lowest effort in life? And what has been your highest effort in life? Remember the key is, if your current stage is the same as the highest effort, that means most likely you are on the right direction because you have not been falling back. But if you have been higher before, but now you are in a lower number, that means there is a problem of lukewarmness. So things need to work on. And as we mentioned at the beginning, to become holy is something that you always don't just look at what you are doing already and say, oh, how good I am, you know. But always look into the next level, what I need to be done. So if you find yourself to be a 4, to be a 5, and look into 5 or 6. If you are 6 already, look into 7. Think about, you know, first for self, you know, and humiliation. What does that mean? Well, pretty scary stuff. But, you know, of course, we don't do everything overnight. It's something that you have to do gradually. But we look into, you know, the next level so that we know what area can be done to grow in the spiritual life. So that's something to think about. You know, we did that in 2014, beginning of the year. It's another year and a half. You can think about, you know, where am I? I think it's
possible in some of the states you can be there for a good number of years too. You know, you may find that, you know, it's not much change since a year and a half ago. Maybe a slight improvement here and there, but maybe not a substantial change from one level to the next.
Okay. I think that's pretty much. I talked for 45 minutes. So I think we should be getting ready for Mass.
So we give these people